Part 3. Second Contact. To one who has faith, no explanation is necessary. To one without faith, no explanation is possible. Thomas Aquinas. C-58. Stevenson Farm, Eastview, Colorado. Uneasily, Dan watched Richard Walker and his flashlight beam heading off towards the edge of the cornfield and the cottage that lay beyond. The night sky was overcast, in stark contrast to the incredibly clear sky Dan had seen over Lolo in his, well, dream didn't seem like the right word. Nor did vision or hallucination or even message. Dan didn't know what it was, but his mind quickly turned to the need to record as much of it as he could remember. He began to move, shortening the distance between himself and Walker. This grew more difficult outside of the crop circle when all he could do was push the high corn aside with his hands, and because he had evidently left home in an unplanned rush, or an unknowing stupor to be more accurate, he didn't even have his phone to use its screen as a light. Rooster, Walker's aging spaniel who had briefly fallen into Dan's care when Walker was abducted a year earlier, and whose animal instincts had played an important role in locating the precise landing spot of the messenger's force field protected craft in Lolo National Forest, ran in slow but happy circles around Dan, excited to see an old friend. At the edge of the field, Dan thought very briefly about running away, but he was in no mood to back down. He didn't consider it likely that Walker would have had a second interaction with the messengers, but pondered the possibility nonetheless. After all, Walker was leading Dan to the cottage and clearly wanted to talk about something. And aside from this, there was a fresh crop circle in the cornfield. Dan saw no reason to fear Walker. Minutes earlier, he had been sitting in a daze while the old hermit stood over him with a shotgun. He knew that if Walker wanted to hurt him, he would no longer have been around to think about anything. As it went, by the time he reached Walker's door, the only thing he was thinking about was the triangle in the sky. When Dan reached the cottage, Walker was standing at the door. "Something tells me I'm not who you came here to see," the old man boomed, his voice still as effortlessly resonant as ever. "But we need to talk." "I need a pen, paper, and 2 minutes of silence," Dan said. Walker raised his eyebrows and tipped his head back, looking down his nose at Dan for several seconds before holding out his hand to invite him inside. A small table sat next to Walker's shoes in the narrow hallway, and Dan stood beside it while Walker fetched him a pen and paper from the kitchen. Dan didn't look at anything but the table, concentrating instead on his mental image of the moon and the prominent constellations he had seen minutes earlier. The image of the triangle was etched in his mind, but what mattered was its position relative to everything else. When Walker returned, Dan drew quickly while covering the image in progress with his other hand. "What do you think I'm going to do?" Walker complained. Dan ignored him. The end product of his efforts certainly lacked the precision and quality of the savant-like map to Lolo and the representation of the messenger's craft his hands had produced the previous year when he wasn't in control of them. But it was a serviceable enough attempt, and he was satisfied that the skyscape on the paper was fairly close to the one he'd seen. With the drawing finished, Dan immediately folded it and put it in his otherwise empty pocket. He handed Walker the pen. "Thanks." Walker eyed him carefully for several seconds, then returned the pen to the kitchen. Dan watched him this time and noticed that his limp was much more pronounced than he remembered. In the light of the house, he also saw that Walker, wearing a gray dressing gown, had lost a serious amount of weight since their last meeting a year earlier. Rooster lay comfortably at Dan's feet, and Dan's moments alone in the hallway were long enough to bring back memories of the fateful night when he had walked the very same hallway with not just Clark and Emma, but also Ben Gold, who had just arrived in a panic at Dan's door to confess his part in the hoax and to tell them that Walker was missing. Dan looked along the short hallway to Walker's bedroom door, remembering how Rooster had gone crazy whenever anyone touched the handle. He thought back to finally going inside and finding an empty bed, only to later see the security camera footage of Walker disappearing in a 7-second flash of light, which coincided perfectly with the precise timing of the DS-1 launch disaster. His eyes also flitted to the other doors, to the other rooms he had searched with Clark in the minutes before Ben Gold drove home for the last time to fetch the box of hoax evidence he would go on to dump at Dan's house before killing himself in the IDA building's parking lot. It was a nice old cottage, but Dan's memories of it weren't exactly warm. "Come on through," Walker called. Still feeling no fear, Dan accepted the invitation and walked quickly to the kitchen. Rooster thought about staying put in his comfortable spot beside the front door, but ultimately followed his old friend. "The GSC is a grave threat to the United States of America," Walker said, wasting no time in getting to his point. "Godfrey is in charge for now, fine. He is a strong pro-West figure. But then what? Cole is already in Ding's pocket, chipping away at Godfrey's authority every chance he gets so that Godfrey is undermined and a Chinese appointment can fill the void." Despite his face being gaunt and his skin pale, Walker spoke with all the verve of his infamous press conferences from years gone by. Dan didn't know why Walker was directing these comments at him, but he had nothing else to do but listen. "And as you well know," Walker went on, "the GSC has an absolute monopoly on launching anything into orbit, be it exploratory or defensive. But why should we believe that they'll protect us? They hate us. After Godfrey's gone, if something bigger than the Kerguelen meteor was heading for Dallas or New York, something big enough to flatten a city but not endanger global life, do you really think they would stop it? Do you really think they would give up the chance to put us on our knees? And give it 20 years for the technology to progress. If they ever discover that something is going to pass close by or maybe even land in the ocean, who's to say they won't knock that something off course? Straight into the continental U.S. Dan leaned back. "And people used to say I was paranoid. And they were wrong," Walker said, "because there was something going on at the IDA, just like there's something going on at the GSC.
Why are you telling me this?"
"Stick with Fiore," Walker said. "I know Ford is with him, so you're all clearly on the same page. Fiore is different from Cole and that rat-faced, shit-stained Jack Neal, because Fiore's actions are weakening the GSC as a whole, and not just Godfrey's position as chairman. Billy Kendrick knows there's something going on in Buenos Aires, too, and I never thought I'd be on the same side as that idiot."
"You're not on the same side as any of us," Dan said. "Your lies are the whole reason the GSC exists. An unfortunate side effect of halting Chinese expansion," Walker sighed.
"We do what we can in the moments when we have to act, McCarthy. If I hadn't initiated the leak sequence I set up with Cluster all those years ago, they'd be halfway to Mars by now."
Walker then coughed violently for several seconds, as though trying to bring up something that wasn't there.
"Are you okay?" Dan asked. Walker stood up and poured himself a glass of water, then opened a pill box next to the sink and swallowed a few pills. Slightly further along the counter, Dan saw a small cardboard box with several warning stickers covering most of the side. He could make out the word morphine.
"Are you dying?" Dan asked, not trying to be blunt, but not trying not to be.
Walker almost smiled. "Everyone is dying, McCarthy. Some of us are just further along than others."
"What is wrong with you?"
"It doesn't matter."
Dan wasn't going to get an answer, and as cold as it may have sounded, this wasn't exactly the main thing on his mind.
"So what'll happen to Rooster?" he asked, moving on to something he did care about. "Joe should come straight out here if I don't push that button within any 72-hour period," Walker explained, pointing to a red button on the wall next to the refrigerator. "Joe Crabb, that is, the only other person who knows where I am. When the time comes, he'll take care of Rooster."
"What do you mean, take care of him?
Jesus, McCarthy," Walker snapped. "Give him a good home. What the hell do you think? Joe and I might be a lot of things, but that doesn't mean we go around taking care of innocent dogs. But anyway, we both know that this is bigger than me. You can look at the airburst at Kerguelen as a lucky break, just like the idiots have always looked at Tunguska as a lucky break since a blast that large could have flattened a city.
but we should be taking it as a warning. That's not to say we couldn't have been even luckier at Kerguelen. If that meteor had come in a few miles further east, right over the island, Billy Kendrick might have been out of our hair. Walker grinned at his own joke, the thin scar between his lips and ear more prominent than ever thanks to the paleness of the surrounding skin. But seriously, McCarthy, he went on, we're not going to be lucky forever, and the GSC isn't going to keep us safe when that luck runs out. Hell, they're working right now to turn the luck around and wipe us out. Kerguelen wasn't a warning from nature, Dan said. It was a message from them. Walker's bloodshot eyes narrowed in focus. A message about what? If they wanted you to know, you would know. Do you know? Dan hesitated. He thought he knew? He thought he knew it was a clue about the location of the imminent fourth plaque. But did he truly know? I know more than you, was the response he settled on. Well, I know that that crop circle sure as hell wasn't there yesterday, Walker said, and I'm assuming they called you here tonight. Let's just say I didn't come for the hospitality. Walker tapped the table and laughed heartily. His smile then faded as he looked at Dan, and his expression quickly morphed into something between sorrow and pity. I wish it hadn't had to be like this, he said. I wish we didn't have a president so weak that the only way to stop China was to push the emergency stop button we came up with all those years ago in case the Soviets ever got the upper hand. Call me sentimental, McCarthy, but even though I had to do it, I wish I'd picked someone else. I probably could have made it work with Kendrick, and he would have deserved all the mess that came his way. I picked you precisely because you were so naive and straightforward. The very traits that made it so difficult for you to deal with everything. And to be blunt about this, I don't think it would have even worked with you if Ford hadn't shown up to help you out when she did. Was that supposed to be an apology? Dan asked, surprised to hear anything like it from Walker, but an eternity away from ever forgiving him. Walker shook his head. No, I just want you to know that I didn't fully consider the effect this would have on you. And if I'd thought for a second that they were actually real, I would have done things very differently. I think it's time for me to go, Dan said, rising to his feet. Thanks for the pen. Walker and Rooster both followed Dan out of the kitchen. Do you want something for your feet? Walker asked, noticing only now that Dan had walked the whole way from Birchwood in a barefoot daze. Dan shook his head. Thanks for the offer, but I'm not walking a single step in your shoes. Suit yourself, but listen carefully, McCarthy. I want you to realize that you have an emergency stop button at your disposal, just like I did. If things get dirty with the GSC and our country is in trouble, you'll always have the nuclear option of telling everyone what really happened. You'll always have the nuclear option of capital F, capital D. Full disclosure. I would do it myself, but I'm not convinced they would let me, and I'm not convinced anyone would believe me, no matter how much evidence I presented. Dan didn't say anything. He knew that full disclosure was decisively off the table, and he certainly didn't need to ask who Walker meant by they. As Rooster lay down again, Walker opened the door. I have nothing to apologize for, he said, placing a large but frail hand on Dan's shoulder. But just remember, when the time comes, neither do you.